Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate
vasudevaya. Sorry about all this elaborate situation sitting up here on the throne. Have a few obstacles with my health, you can say. Hard for me to sit properly on the floor. My first class in about 18 months, so please forgive me if I stumble my way through this. Hopefully, it'll be worth your while and mine. At least the purport will. Listen to the purport. Okay. We'll do the word for it. Asit.
Asit.
Puranjano.
Puranjano.
Nama.
Nama.
Raja.
Raja.
Rajan.
Rajan.
Vihashravaha.
Vihashravaha.
Tasya vidyata.
Tasya vidyata.
Namasit.
Namasit.
Saka vidyata.
Saka vidyata.
Cheshtitaha.
Cheshtitaha.
Asit Puranjano Nama.
Asit Puranjano Nama.
Raja Rajan Vihashravaha.
Raja Rajan Vihashravaha.
Tasya vidyata namasit.
Tasya vidyata namasit.
Saka vidyata cheshtitaha.
Saka vidyata cheshtitaha.
Asit puranjano nama.
Asit puranjano nama.
Raja rajan brihashravaha.
Raja rajan brihashravaha.
Tasya vidyata namasit.
Tasya vidyata namasit.
Saka vidyata cheshtitaha.
Saka vidyata cheshtitaha.
Asit puranjano nama.
Asit puranjano nama.
Raja rajan brihashravaha.
Raja rajan brihashravaha.
Tasya vidyata namasit.
Tasya vidyata namasit.
Saka vidyata cheshtitaha.
Saka vidyata cheshtitaha.
Asit.
Asit.
There was.
Puranjanaha.
Puranjanaha.
Puranjana.
Puranjana.
Nama.
Nama.
Name.
Name.
Raja.
Raja.
King.
King.
Rajam.
Rajam.
O King.
O King.
Brihashravaha.
Brihashravaha.
Whose activities were great.
Whose activities were great.
Tasya.
Tasya.
His.
His.
Avijata.
Avijata.
The unknown one.
The unknown one.
Nama.
Nama.
Of the name.
Of the name.
Asit.
Asit.
There was.
There was.
Saka.
Saka.
Friend.
Friend.
Avijata.
Avijata.
Unknown.
Unknown.
Cheshtitaha.
Cheshtitaha.
Whose activities? Translation. My dear King, once in the past lived a king named Puranjana, who was celebrated for his great activities. He had a friend named Avijata, the unknown one. No one could understand the activities of Avijata. Translation, please repeat. My dear King, once in the past lived a king named Puranjana.
Once in the past lived a king named Puranjana.
Who was celebrated for his great activities.
Who was celebrated for his great activities.
He had a friend named Avijata.
No one could understand the activities of Abhijata.
No one could understand the activities of Abhijata.
Srila Prabhupada spoke. Please listen carefully. This is a fairly long purport. A very important purport. Every living entity is Pudanjana. The word Buddha means within this body, within this form, and Jana means living entity. Thus everyone is Pudanjana. What does Pudam mean? City, it means a city, but what the Prabhupada said means the body. Pudam means the body, the form. And Jana? Living entities, the common folk, the people, living entities. Every living entity is supposed to be the king of his body, because the living entity is given full freedom to use his body as he likes. The king is what up. He can do whatever he likes. So we're the king of the body. He usually engages his body for sense gratification, because one who is in the bodily conception of life feels that the ultimate goal of life is to serve the senses. This is the process of karmakanda. One who has no inner knowledge, who does not know that he is actually the spirit soul living within the body, who is simply enamored by the dictation of the senses, is called a materialist. A materialistic person interested in sense gratification can be called a Pudanjana. Because such a materialistic person utilizes his senses according to his whims, he may also be called a king. An irresponsible king takes the royal position to be his personal property and misuses his treasury for sense gratification. The Prabhupada has given us a definition here of terms. Pudanjana, and given us a nice definition of who is the materialist, the Kamakandi, and how we can be referred to as the Pudanjana. Who is a Pudanjana? What the Prabhupada say? Pudanjana, if somebody calls someone a Pudanjana, what do you call them?
Sanskrit,
materialist. He's a Pudanjana. You say that to your friends at school. You're a Pudanjana. I don't say that to your friends. You won't make many friends. You can call your friend a king. Call him Raja. He'll be happy then. Call him Pudanjana if you say it. The word Brihashravaha is also significant. More definition. The word Shrava means fame. The living entity is famous from ancient times, for as stated in the Bhagavad Gita 2.20, Najayate Murite Lakarajan. The living entity is never born and never dies. Because he is eternal, his activities are eternal, although they are performed in different types of bodies. Nahanyate Hanyamane Shagire. He doesn't apply even after the annihilation of the body. Thus, the living entity transmigrates from one body to another and performs various activities. In each body, the living entity performs so many acts. Sometimes he becomes a great hero. Just like Hiranyakashipu and Kamsa. Or in the modern age, Napoleon and Hitler. The activities of such men are certainly very great. Brihashrava, very great activities. But as soon as their bodies are finished, everything else is finished. Then they remain in name only. Therefore, a living entity may be called Brihashrava, a getting a lot of names here for the living entity.
He may have a great reputation for various types of activities. Nonetheless, he has a friend whom he does not know.
Sounds like a contradiction, doesn't it? He's got a friend and he doesn't know who his friend is.
Materialistic persons do not understand that God is present as a super soul who is situated in the heart of every living entity. Although the Paramatma sits beside the Jivatma as a friend, the Jivatma of the living entity does not know it. Consequently, he is described as avijñāta sakā, meaning one who has an unknown friend. The word avijñāta cēṣṭitaḥ is also significant because a living entity works hard under the direction of the Paramatma and is carried away by the laws of nature. Nonetheless, he thinks himself independent of God and independent of the stringent laws of material nature. It is stated in Bhagavad Gita 2.24, Achetyo yam, adhayo yam, akledyo shoshe eracha, nitya sahagatastanu, achalo yam sanatana. The individual soul is unbreakable and insoluble. What does insoluble mean? Insoluble.
Doesn't dissolve.
Doesn't dissolve. The soul can't dissolve. Unbreakable, and it can neither be burned nor dried. He is everlasting, all-pervading, unchangeable, immovable, and eternally the same. The living entity is sanatana, eternal. Because he cannot be killed by any weapon, burnt into ashes by fire, soaked or moistened by water, nor dried up by the air, he is considered to be immune to material reactions. Although he is changing bodies, he is not affected by the material conditions. He is placed under the material conditions and he acts according to the directions of his friend. Who's his friend? Paramatma, the super soul. But he doesn't know his super soul. He's a friend, but he doesn't know his friend. Avijñāta sakā. I stated in Bhagavad Gita 15:15, Sarvasya caham vidhi sannivishto. Mataha smriti jnana apohanam cha. I am seated in everyone's heart and from me come remembrance, knowledge and forgetfulness. Thus the Lord as Paramatma is situated in everyone's heart and he gives directions to the living entity to act in whatever way the living entity desires. In this life and in his previous lives, the living entity does not know that the Lord is giving him a chance to fulfill all kinds of desires. No one can fulfill any desire without the sanction of the Lord. All the facilities given by the Lord are unknown to the conditioned soul.
Om Agyanati Vidandasya Yananjanaha Shadakaya Chakshunamitam Yena Tasmai Sri Buddhave Namaha Chaitanya Manovishnam Stavitam Yena Bhutale Namasreshtam Anumati Sachiputra Frasvadutam Dutam Vasya Gajanguru Purima Pringo Shabitim Radhakundigiri Vadam Odadhika Madhavasam Praptaya Sapatita Kripaya Sri Guruntam Natosmi
Asitpuram Jano Nama Rajan Rajan Vihakshravaha Tasya Vijyata Namasit Saka Vijyata Cheshtitaha. My dear king, once in the past lived a king named Puranjana who was celebrated for his great activities. He had a friend named Avijñāta, the unknown one. No one could understand the activities of Avijñāta.
Shiva Vyasadeva is the literary incarnation of Krishna, of God. God appears in the material world then as an author. We all have our favorite authors in the material world, and there's been many famous authors of the literatures who have written great poetry and dramas and who have written great songs. But Krishna came and he established the ultimate, the paragon, the standard, the ultimate standard, the gold standard of literature. And that is, as he did that as his own, as an author, as Shiva Vyasadeva, as a writer, as a compiler. He compiled the Vedas, but he wrote in many different styles. Technically, we call them genres. He wrote in many types of... In the Srimad Bhagavatam, we will see, and when we read and hear, as we hear Srimad Bhagavatam, we hear narrative, a lot of narrative. We hear a lot of description, an amazing description. And in Sanskrit language, the description is embellished by alankara, by ornaments. The ornaments that Shiva Vyasadeva employs in the Srimad Bhagavatam and Mahabharatam are the same ornaments that we try to use in our literary writing today. If you go to a writing class by Bhurijan Prabhu, he used to give writing classes in the 90s. I don't think he'll give them now, but you can get them from the VAAT. You can download his old writing classes. And they're very, very excellent, amazing classes, of course. And in those classes, you'll teach all the different devices, literary devices, that we have to make up, to embellish the writing, to make the writing attractive, so that the reader will feel obliged or will feel inclined to turn the next page. They won't want to put the book down. They'll stay up until it's finished because it's written in such a way, it's a captivating way. It's written in such a way that's very attractive. And that's because we use metaphor and we use analogy and we use simile and we use allegory. And this story today is written of this story that we're going to hear for the next so many months, in the next five chapters of Srimad Bhagavatam, is a very elaborate allegory. And in this allegory, an allegory is a literary device that describes one thing to indicate another thing. It might be a place or a concept, a moral concept, a religious principle. But so we're describing one thing. And here, Narada Muni is very expertly employing this technique to preach to Prachini Bahishat, because he doesn't want to directly tell him that he's a sense gratifier. Because he won't feel good. Like if you tell your friend at school you're a Paranjana, he won't feel good. Don't go to school and say that. But if you say you're a Raja, he'll feel like, oh, good, he's a nice friend, he called me Raja. He's a good friend. I like him the best. So Narada Muni uses a similar technique. And we see that technique in Chaitanya Charitamrita displayed many times. Lord Chaitanya uses a technique of developing rapport with the people that he's preaching to, the people that he's trying to inspire in Krishna consciousness. Particularly we saw that in Varanasi when he was in Kashi, in Benares. The only city in the world that's got three names, officially three names. So, when Lord Chaitanya was in Varanasi, more than 500 years ago, he was preaching to Mayavadi sannyasis in Varanasi. And there, he used a technique of flattering, and he used it many times, of flattering them. And because of his humility and because of his expertise as a the Supreme Personality Godhead himself, in logic, in taka, in nyaya, and in the shastra, he was able to convince them. But he convinced them not by telling them that they were useless guys and that they didn't know anything and that they're all stupid mayavadis, but he convinced them by first through his approach, for through his humility. Amani Tvamadambi. First of all, he sat in the dirty place where you wash the feet. And because of his effulgence, they were like, why are you sitting there in such a dirty place? His effulgence lit the whole room. And they asked him to come and sit properly on the elevator platform. And he went there. And because he approached them in a humble way, he developed that rapport, that they became inclined to listen to what he's got to say. This person looks amazing, and he's not coming in here with his chest out and a big puffed up guy. He's coming very humbly, and we'll listen to him. So Narada Muni is employing this technique with Prachinibhagasha. He's telling a story about another story. And in modern days, we have many psychological therapies. Psychology therapies are based around this concept, this principle. Logotherapy, many, many different therapies, where you say one thing to indicate another thing. So you're not being direct, but the person is subconsciously, they're internalizing the message, and that message becomes implanted in your consciousness. So the first thing that Prabhupada mentions here is he does logically presents definition. Can someone get up and say it? Gets the definition. And the first definition that he's giving is Pudanjana. We already discussed that. And this Pudanjana is somebody who is a karmakandi, who is interested in sense gratification. Materialistic person. And the person who is a materialist, he can't see Krishna. He's a Bhogaishvari. Taya Parita Jetasam. Because he's so enamored by bhoga and aishvarya, by enjoyment and material opulence, this is a block for seeing Krishna. This is a hindrance. Because whereas we're turning away from Krishna and we're trying to enjoy our material senses. Hiranyakashipu, Prabhupada mentions Hiranyakashipu as one of these Brihat Shravas, and great activities in the past. And his great activities were about himself. They weren't for other people, they weren't for Krishna, for God. They were so he could establish his supremacy, his position as Ishvaraham, as a great enjoyer, as a great controller, as the Raja, exploiter, as Prabhupada mentions here, exploiting his facilities that have been given by God. He exploits them, and that is a materialist. And when Bali Maharaj was, when Lord Vamanadeva appeared in the sacrificial arena of Bali Maharaj, Bali Maharaj glorified Vamana, and Shukacharya didn't like to hear this glorification. He wanted that Bali Maharaj wouldn't give him an inch. He shouldn't give anything to this person who's come into the arena because he's a cheater. He's going to take everything. Give him an inch and he'll take the whole lot. So after Bali Maharaj offered everything, was prepared to offer everything to Krishna, Lord Vamanadeva to the dwarf Brahmana, Lord Vamana was very pleased with him and he spoke. And the first thing he said, he spoke to him that never in his dynasty has one of these great kings not given charity to a Brahmana. They've never forgotten to give charity. They've never reneged on charity. They've never said, I'll give something and taken it back. No one in their dynasty. And this is the dynasty of Prahlad Maharaj. So nobody in his dynasty, his grandfather, never did this. And Virochana never did this. And his previous forefathers, they never did that. They never reneged on a charity. And they never didn't offer a fight to a Kshatriya. If a Kshatriya came and offered a fight, they never said, no, I'm not going to fight. They never ran away. They didn't do like that. So he's fully expecting that Bali Maharaj will fulfill his promise to give whatever he's asked for. And he enjoys, he recognizes and acknowledges that. Lord Vamana to Bali. Right. And then he says to Bali Maharaj, he tells him the story of Hiranyaksha and Varaha, when the Lord appeared as Varaha. And he appears as Varaha
to save the earth from the Gabadak and to fight with Hiranyaksha. And he has a very big fight with him. He describes the fight. Lord Brahmana says, they had such a fight, like a fight he'd never experienced before, he said. Lord Vishnu had fought with this Hiranyaksha. And finally he killed him, Hiranyaksha, and he was very satisfied. And after he killed him, his brother, Hiranyakashipu, became very angry at Lord Vishnu. And he went straight to Lord Vishnu's abode. He's so powerful, Hiranyakashipu, he could go to Vaikuntha. He went to the abode of Lord Vishnu, let's say. So he went to the abode of Lord Vishnu, and he searched everywhere that Vishnu was hiding from him. And you know where Vishnu was hiding from him? Vishnu saw that Hiranyakashipu was coming in very angry, like he's Superman, and he wants to kill him, and he wants to cause a lot of problems. So he hid in a very, very special place, very clever place, in his heart. Mm-hmm. He went in his nostril, and he's hiding in the heart of Hiranyakashipu. Because Hiranyakashipu is a Puranjana. Prabhupada said here, he's a Puranjana. Puranjana will never look in the heart. He's looking outside. So Krishna's safe in there. He's safe in hiding there, he'll never find him. Impossible. He can't find him. He's a materialist. So this is the condition of a materialist. That because they're always Bahimukha, they're always looking outside, then they can't connect with and recognize and acknowledge that their activities, that their facilities are provided for by Supersoul, Paramatma, Krishna. Arjuna in the Gita, he says to Krishna, how did you explain this science to Vivashvan? Vivashvan's so old, he's been living a long time, you just came here now, you've been here for the last 80 years, 100 years ago. How can you say you gave this knowledge to Vivashvan? And then Krishna explained that he gave many, many, many births. He said, and he can remember all of his births, but Arjuna can't remember them. He forgets them. But we have had many births, millions of them. Brahmanda Brahmeti Koi Vaikyavanaji. We've been wandering in many, 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 many millions of universes. We can't remember them. But Paramatma, who accompanied us the whole way, our Abhigyata Saka, he remembers everything. That unknown friend in the heart, he remembers everything and he inspires us to act in a way that we cultivated that desire, such a desire to act in that way. So we got a particular type of a body, a particular type of a mind, a particular set of senses, a particular intelligence to fulfill our desires, our karmas. And Paramatma is the one who is reminding us about that. Because he knows past, present and future. He knows everything we did. We forget everything. At the time of death, Prabhupada said, that's forgetfulness. Forget. That's over that chapter. And then it's the next chapter, it's the next body. And the next body. So, there's many practical examples of the presence of, or the influence of Paramatma on the jiva, on the living entity. So some people say, you know, Paramatma is very much a prominent feature of the Vedic philosophy, of the Vedic understanding of spirituality, Paramatma. But it's quite weak in other systems, you can say. It's it's not really developed. There's some sense of it there, and Prabhupada recognized that sometimes in some Catholic doctrine, some Francis of Assisi or whatever, that it's not very prominent and it's not very consistent or comprehensively developed. But in Bhagavatam, back in the Gita and the Veda, it's very prominent. It's a very key feature. It's a cornerstone, you can say. That the living entity and the Paramatma are together through their sojourn in the material world. They stay together. Paramatma is an incarnation of Krishna in the heart. So they're together. There are some living entities that do amazing things if you observe in nature.
some birds and some fish and some different animals. And if you analyze what they do, it can't be just a mechanistic response to their instinct or to their senses. Impossible. Can't be. If you analyze it. We lived in New Zealand for many years, in Auckland. And just outside of, we live northwest of the city. And very close to, New Zealand is a very unique country because it's a small country. And the North Island, if you go 20 minutes either side, you'll be on the coast, pretty much. Half an hour either side of Auckland, you're on the coast. So it's surrounded by water. I mean, Australia's surrounded by water, but if you go 5 hours either side, you might, if you're in Darwin, you might not get anywhere. Or in Alice Springs. But in Auckland, it's different. So there we were living in the northwest of the city, just outside of the city. And we had a beach. One of our beaches was a black sand beach, Mirawai. It's a famous beach there. And in the black sand beach, the sand became black from the volcanoes. The whole of Auckland is a volcano. So on the black sand beach, there is huge cliffs and rock face. And there's a beautiful big surf beach there. But it's very, very rugged terrain. It's exposed to the elements, to the wind and to the water, to the surf, to the storms. It's very, very rugged terrain. And so there's a bird there called a gannet. Have you heard of a gannet? No? It's like a very big-sized seagull, massive bird, much, much bigger than a seagull. It's white. And they nest there on the side of this cliff. And the cliff is howling wind, and these little baby gannets, when they're born, they call them a nest, but it's just on the side, it's just a rock. It's not a rock face. It's not like they build a nice nest with cozy grass and cotton and all different twigs and things that they find, like a nest in a tree that we had here. They just nest on the rock. They're in the rock. And there's thousands of them nesting on this rock. Or at least hundreds and hundreds of them nesting on these rocks, on the cliff face. And they learn to fly by just jumping off. It's very high. And they just jump off the cliff, and the wind, the gushes of wind, they take the birds up into the sky. So that's how they learn to fly. They just fall off the rock, and the wind takes them, and then they learn to use their wings, and they become, you know, expert aerobics. Aeronautical engineers. And so that for 13 weeks they do that. After nesting, after being born, for 13 weeks they learn how to fly. And then the whole crew, all of the babies, not the parents, the mothers and the fathers, stay back at Mirawai in Auckland because they want to see the devotees. The devotees go on the field there. They want to stay there for the prasad. And the babies, they go. The babies leave Mirawai, all of them together. Not one of them has made a trip outside of this little location where the rocks are. And then they fly across to Australia. They come to Melbourne and Sydney. And they stay here for 2 or 3 years as their maiden journey. Their maiden journey is from Mirawai to Bondi, straight to Sydney, from Mirawai to Sydney without a stop. Express. No stopping. And they... No one's been there before, but they get exactly to the right place. They go from their location in Mirawai exactly to Bondi. The same place every year. A whole new batch of gannets get there. And then they stay there for a few years and they grow up. This is when they leave Mirawai when they're teenagers. They're 13. They leave when they're 13 and they go away and they become adults. Big birds. And then they fly back exactly to the nest where they were born. They find there's millions of them on this nest, on this cliff face. Not millions, but lots of them on this cliff face. And they fly exactly to the nest where they were born. After a few years, come back, and then they nest, and their babies go. So this keeps happening. And there are many examples like this. That is not, you can't explain that their instinct took them to Bondi, every one of them. Every time. Every generation goes to Bondi. Every generation goes. Impossible. So the super soul is reminded, you're a gannet, you belong in Bondi. Get out of Mirawai and go back there when you want to have a children. So that's how it happens. Same with these salmon, these fish, they swim upstream. You know the salmon, they swim upstream back to have their children. So they swim 6,000 miles Vaisheshika was telling us about these salmon, the Californian salmon, and probably the salmon here, I don't know. But anyway, these Californian salmon, they swim from the river, they're born in the river, they swim out of the river, downstream, into the ocean, for 6,000 kilometers, 6,000 miles, right, from here to India or something like that. They swim. And then back, 6,000, after many, many years, not 2 years, after a long life of a fish. So after 10 years, something like that, they come back to the river, they swim upstream. This is the only fish that can swim up the stream. These fish go that way, downstream. This fish goes upstream and goes all the way back up to where it was born, to exactly the same place where it was born. Because it won't procreate until it gets to that same location. And that's how those species can use. So there's many, many examples in nature that tell us that there must be something more than this instinct, and there must be something more than mechanistic science. There must be a creator behind this. There must be an intelligence that's working behind this. It's something greater than us and the entity. So this, we talked about some of the vitri alankaras that Srila Vyasadeva was utilizing in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And one of them, he uses a combination of allegory and metaphor and simile in one sloka, where in the 10th canto of Bhagavatam, the demigods are offering their prayers to Devaki in the womb, the Gavastuti. And there he describes in great detail this Dvikhaga, Dadi Vrikshaha. There's two birds who are sitting on the original tree. Ekayam also, Dvipada, Trimulas. And this original tree has two consequences. That is, one of them is happiness, and one of them is distress. Two of them. And it's deeply rooted, Trimulas, with the three modes of material nature. And on this tree, there's four tastes, chaturasa. Four tastes are economic development, artham, artha, karma, and moksha. They're the four tastes of this original tree that we occupy. And there are five types of ways that we acquire knowledge, five senses. So there's chaturasa, panchavita, shatatma. There's six different types of circumstances that the living entity engages in and experiences. And the tree has seven types of bark, saptatvak, the seven coverings of the tree. That's like the blood and the skin, the blood, the muscle, and the semen, and the seven layers on the skin. And then there are eight types of the eight elements, Bhumi, Apa, Naruva, Kamana, Nubhaya, the eight separated elements of Krishna make up this tree. And there are nine holes of the tree. There's nine different types of holes, the eyes, and nostrils, and mouth, the ears, and the genitals. And there are ten leaves on the tree. Dasha chadi, dukkha, yadi vrikshaha. The ten leaves represent the ten life airs of the living entity. And there's two birds in this tree. Dvikaga. Prabhupada says, in the purple, Prabhupada explains, defines the kagaha. Kagaha is another name for a bird in Sanskrit. Because ga means to go, right? Gachati means to go. And ka means the sky. So one who goes in the sky is kaga, the bird. So Prabhupada said, these three kaga, these two birds in the tree of this body, the Adi Vrikshaha, the original tree, one is a living entity, other Paramatma. Same message that we're hearing here in another allegory here in the fourth canto of Bhagavatam. So this Avijja Svatsaka, this unknown friend, is someone we need to get to know. And that's someone that we are getting to know. The Parampara, Srila Prabhupada, the The devotees are introducing us to this unknown friend, and we're starting to become relieved of the suffering, the two consequences of being in the tree, the icha dvesha, the duality of happiness and distress. When we start to know who is the avijñāsukha, our friend, we become transcendental to that. And we become inclined through the process of bhakti. The process of bhakti is a purification process, purifying process, to peel back these layers, the seven layers, and to peel back the elements that are covering us, to become free from the modes that are keeping the tree deeply rooted in the material existence of puranjana. Right? These sattva guna, raja guna, tama guna that keep us here, condition us to become, to perpetuate our puranjana mentality. But the bhakti process is enabling us to uproot that deep-rooted desire, that deep-rooted tree, and to turn our consciousness from puranjana to Krishna, to our avijñāsukha, that surit naha. Krishna is the... By hearing about Krishna, his lip, that śrīmatā svakatā Krishna punya śrāvana kītana vijyanti stoya bhadarani vidunati surit sakam. His that friend in the heart, that avijñāsukha, he wants to cleanse the heart for us. He wants to go to work, he wants to assist, he wants to help us cleanse the heart. But we have to make a decision, we have to make a choice. We have the freedom. Living entity has the freedom to choose. Arjuna had the freedom, Krishna gave him the freedom. You choose. Now I've said you choose. So we have the same choice to make. If we make the right choice, then we get to know that friend, Sakha, that Surit, Surit Satam, that friend of the devotees. By engaging in activities that will help us to become free from this original tree of material existence. Lord Balaram, you know, when the Lord Rama took all the cowherd boys and the calves away from Krishna, and he came back, and Lord Krishna said, Krishna was momentarily bewildered. But he knew, because he's in the heart of all living entities, he knew it was the work of Brahma. But because of the yoga maya, lila, shakti of the Lord, he wanted to act like he was a bit confused, a bit bewildered. Then he realized, this is Brahma, Lord Brahma, and no one else could do this. Because Brahma had come to see what happened with Agasura. Brahma was amazed. Brahma was offering prayers. He was offering flowers to Krishna. Good job. How you did that with Agasura, I don't know how you did it, but it was amazing. And he was so happy with Krishna. And then he said, I'm going to test this Krishna further. He's a little coward boy. He doesn't have Maya Shakti. Krishna, Lord Brahma creates the universe. I don't know if this boy in Vrindavan with the yogurt in his left hand, he can't make a universe like me. I can make a universe. So he went down to test Krishna's Shakti. But then Krishna really tried testing him out and put him into a big illusion, Lord Brahma, to illustrate or to demonstrate that Krishna is the supreme Adipurusham Tamaham Bhajami. We worship Krishna because there's no one like Krishna. He's Shakti. He expanded himself in as every calf and as every cowherd boy, exactly like they were, exact replicas. They weren't all just Krishnas. They weren't just like four-armed forms of Krishna or Vishnu. Not like that at all. Exactly how the mothers had dressed them, with the same flute, the same stick, the same everything, they had the same. There wasn't any difference. Fingerprints, everything. Everything was exactly new. Exactly individual. Right? Identical. Every calf had exactly the same hair, the same bristle, the same spots, the same hoof. Everything the same. The same horns coming out. Everything identical. Not one thing was different. So that was Krishna. Only Krishna can do that prophecy. No one else can do that. Only Krishna can lift Govardhan, only Krishna can expand himself into the calves and the cowherds. Exactly. Identically. So for 1 whole year after Agasura, they went back and everybody, the boys enjoying, the mothers enjoying. But something strange happened in Vrindavan. For 1 year,
And nobody knew what was going on, not even Lord Balaram. Doji, he didn't know. He was under the Yoga Maya Shakti also. But then he thought, what's going on here? He saw the cows. When the big cows ran down Govardhan Hill to feed the calves, and the cowherd men couldn't control them, and the boys were down the bottom, so the cowherd men were very angry. They were thinking, the boys must think we're not very good cowherders. The cows got away from us, and now they're feeding their babies down the bottom of the calf, and they're not even their new babies. They're the old calves. They've had another lot of calves since then. Those calves are getting older now. They're growing. But they're feeding those ones. They don't feed those ones. They feed the new baby calf. So how is it that they're feeding these old calves? That's when Balaram clicked. Come on, something's going on here. I know these calves. And they're not the new calves. So what's happening? He said that apurvam prema varate, that something strange is happening. They're feeling more love, the Brajavasis, Brajasya, and me, Satmana, Tokeshu. All the Brajavasis and even me are feeling more love for this, for our friends and our babies and our calves. Something's quite strange here. So he says, Kimetadabhutamiva. What is this wonderful thing that's happening? I know that that Krishna's got something. He knows what's happening. What is it? Kimeta Arbhutam. What is Arbhutam? You know? It means Arbhuta Shringam.
Wonderful.
Something wonderful. What is this wonderful thing that is happening? That Krishna is doing something very, very unique here. Something that only Krishna can do. Something very special. What is it? So he asked Krishna, what's going on? Why do the cowherders and the gopas and the gopis, why are they loving their children more now? They used to love Krishna more and their children, but they didn't say anything. But now they're loving their children exactly like that. They used to love Krishna. Apurvam, prema, bharate. Like before, they used to love, now they're doing that to their own children and their calves. Something's wrong. So he revealed. He called him the Akhilatma, Vasudeva Akhilatmani, that Vasudeva, this Krishna, who is the super soul in the heart, he's done something here. He's Akhilatma. He's changing things here. And it was revealed, Krishna revealed. This was, Prabhupada said, it was 4 or 5 days before the end of the whole year. 4 or 5 days just before he revealed. To Balaram, not to anyone else. So Balaram could understand what was happening. So that is the process. Our process is that we want to see Krishna. We want to see that Vasudeva Akhilatmani, who's in the heart of the living entities, do these wonderful activities, perform these wonderful, and understand Krishna's hand in everything. That we see Krishna as Paramatma, he's inspiring, he's directing, he's witnessing everything that we do. And acknowledging that Krishna is witnessing and inspiring and directing everything that we do, we reconnect with Krishna. We re-establish our relationship with Krishna, sambandha, through the avideya, through the process, through the bhakti. And we achieve that, the ultimate goal of bhakti, that is to be connected with Krishna. So we're no longer puranjanas. We become purified of our puranjana mentality. We uproot the three modes of material nature that are holding and binding us to the material world. We're no longer attracted to the four rasas. Dhamma, artha, kama, moksha. This is a prema kumartha. The devotee is going for a higher rasa, for a higher taste, to love Krishna. We're no longer conditioned by or influenced by the six different circumstances in our life of birth and death, of lamentation, of hankering, of hunger and thirst. For the devotee, these things are not significant. They don't happen. They don't influence. That's something that Prabhupada Maharaj recognized. That before, when he was hearing Bhagavatam, he didn't have any thirst or hunger. When he was hearing from Shukadeva Goswami, he said previously he got thirsty and he went into the ashram of the Muni and he didn't get any water. He was thirsty and therefore he was cursed previously. But now, I don't have any thirst, no hunger, because I'm hearing the katha of Krishna. That's where we want to get to. We want to become free from these coverings, the ten life airs and the nines. We want to, these are materialistic, these are binding living entity.
Brahma Buddha
stage. We want to get there. And that place is a place where we see Krishna face to face, Prabhupada says. Like, that's a place where we will curse the creator of the universe for giving eyelids. Nadyo nadascha murita kupita mnescha. That we'll curse Lord Brahma. Why did you give eyelids? Now I can't see Krishna. I blinked and I didn't see him for that long. So long I didn't see Krishna. And the description that they give in that verse of it's in the end of the ninth canto, right? Just before the tenth canto. And Sukadeva Goswami is preparing us and prepping us for something to come. It's like a trailer. You know, in the movies, they put out the trailer. He gives this trailer. And this trailer, he gives a very beautiful description of Krishna. Brajat Kapola. Suvilasa Subhaga Hasan. That Krishna has got his very effulgent, resplendent kapola, cheeks. And he's always got a beautiful smile on his face, Krishna. Subhaga Hasan. He's always smiling and he looks very, very gorgeous, this Krishna. And that Krishna, he's got the Makara Kundala, he's the shark-shaped earrings, and Charukarna. Beautiful ears. Every aspect of Krishna is very attractive and sensational. And with this description, it says that it's a festival for the gopas and the gopas of Vrindavan, for the Brajavasis, for the devotees. Krishna is a festival for the eyes. Nityotsava. It's a festival, non-stop festival. Isn't it? They can't take the eyes off Krishna for a moment. They drink the nectar through their eyes. It's a good sava. Nityotsava. Shamam hiranya paridambhanamadhyadaha. Bhaga. When the wives of the proud Vedic Brahmanas saw Krishna in the groves of Vrindavan, they saw him standing there looking so attractive. Shamam hidanya paridimbanamalya baha. He's looking like a monsoon cloud, his color, his skin. And he's wearing a beautiful gold dhoti cloth. And he's got a peacock feather. Where? On the top. He's got a peacock feather in his hair, in his turban. And he's standing there very nonchalantly with a hand on his friend. Vinyasta hasta itarenu dununa matra. He's standing like this, Krishna. And he's with his hand, he's waving the lotus flower. And the wives, they've never seen Krishna. The first time they saw Krishna, standing like this, he looked like a dramatic actor on the stage. Shamam hiranya paridindu namahita. Tatu parvara natavesham anubra tamse. He looks like an actor. He's dressed up with all these beautiful decorations and ornaments, and he's standing there. This looks like something out of a movie. How did he get there like this? It looks incredible. So that's the goal, Prayojana, is to get to see Krishna and to curse Lord Brahma that we can't see him enough. And we only get there by the process of bhakti, to turn away from our Puranjana mentality, to engage in the service of the Lord and to reap the benefits of that in our bhakti. Are there any questions or comments?
So we mentioned about how Krishna's in the heart and we're doing your they covered with ego and pride and all their laughter, so we're not able to listen to Krishna's intelligence. So how do we get there? And also another thing is, sometimes do we think, is this intelligence coming from the mind or is it coming from Krishna? I can't decide. So is it just sharpening of this chant and then they get sharpening intelligence?
So just to repeat for those who can't hear, not that you can't hear, but people who can't hear outside, that how do we connect with that, with the super soul, because we're so covered over by so many layers of ahankara, false ego, and materialistic intelligence, covered intelligence. So how do we connect with that? Is it just through sharpening intelligence through chanting? Right, through chanting and through this process. I'm glad that point came up first off, because we need to really focus on the process. And I tried to, I alluded to the process, but not details of the process. And the process begins with and finishes with chanting, japa. And when we chant japa carefully with attention, we start to connect with Krishna. And then we pray for thousands of years and thousands of tongues, and Krishna will dance in the courtyard of the heart. Like Rupa Goswami is praying. But to get there, to get to that position, we need to apply ourselves. It's not something that, you know, we say it's automatic. We say automatically you'll get all the qualities of the asuras, of the asuras. We'll get automatically get the qualities of the demigods if we do bhakti. But automatic means you have to do work. A small print. You know, we think, oh, this is a really cool process, it's automatic. But then you read between the lines, and actually there's a lot of hard work. To get it into autopilot, it has to do hard work. You have to really know what's going on there. And you have to prove yourself to Krishna, prove yourself to the spiritual master. And we do that by sadhana. The things we do, perfection comes from the things you do every day. Right? And we just keep, we're wearing away at that, like this, we just keep non-stop application, relentlessly applying ourselves to the process, whether we like it or not, whether we're feeling happy or we're feeling sad. Whether we had a good day at work or a bad day at work, whether we had an argument or a dinner night, whatever it is, we still do the bhakti, we still do the chanting. And the chanting, we should do chanting as much as we can in one stretch. There's a few tricks and tips in chanting Hare Krishna that you can pick up from many, many devotees for the last 2 decades have been presenting japa retreats and japa workshops. And they're all over the internet, thank God. They're all over the internet. So we have access to some amazing resources to help us to improve our japa. Mahatma Prabhu and Giridhari Swami and Gurujan Prabhu and Satyananda Swami. The list goes on and on and on. Of very exalted devotees who have been doing japa for 50 plus years, and who started to realize that the beginning and the end of this process of understanding our conditioned nature and becoming free from the Patanjali mentality is to chant the 10 rounds and to chant as much as we can 16 rounds in one go. Mahatma Prabhu has this saying in his workshops. I'm not sure if you've ever seen Mahatma Prabhu's workshops, but they're quite amazing. And in one of his workshops, an old one, maybe 20 years ago, he says that he has all these little sayings. He's got affirmations. He calls them, he's got 20 affirmations to help improve your japa. And we've been reading those affirmations for some time at home. And sometimes myself and my wife, we have a joke with each other. Not a joke, it's a serious thing. But when someone tries to interrupt, if I try to interrupt her or she tries to interrupt me, or of course the phone rings or something happens, we say, when I chant, I chant. That's one of his affirmations. When I chant, So don't bother me. You know, don't get bothered by anything. Nothing. No notifications. No, turn off the notifications. Throw the phone out the window. Just chant. When you can, you chant. You know? And then he did some skits with people chanting in front of the television, and people chanting while they're talking to each other, and people chanting, engaging in different activities. Because those things that we do, you see sometimes people walking along the street and they've got their hand in the beanbag and they've got a phone. They're talking to someone, they're adding something. And sometimes you see people with the clicker. This is a classic. You see people with a clicker and they're chanting Hare Krishna, they're talking to you and they're clicking. How do I do that? They're clicking through their rounds. But they're fully in the conversation. They started the conversation. And they're clicking away. I did a round and a half in that conversation. So japa is really important, yeah. And that will sharpen the intelligence. We do that chanting to re-establish our relationship with Krishna. We want to chant. I get to chant. I love to chant. That's one of his affirmations. Should have a Mahatma Guru workshop. I want to chant. I get to chant. I love to chant. It's nice. We made a little video of it. I can share it with you if you want. It's nice. Yes.
Prabhupada, thank you very much for a nice class. Why do you vexing and draining when our service to Krishna? Sometimes we very close to Krishna and sometimes we get very far off. So what do you call vexing and draining?
Yeah, why do we experience this waxing and waning of our connectedness with Krishna? Sometimes we're close and sometimes we feel a long way away. Ever had that experience? I got really close, fired up, and by the afternoon, who? Krishna? Who's that? Well, one of the reasons is because of our conditioning. The main reason, of course, is conditioning. It goes into nature. Because they're always fighting for supremacy. Goodness, passion, ignorance. And therefore it says from sattva we get knowledge. Sattvam jnana vijayate. From goodness we get knowledge. And knowledge means, in this context, knowledge means that we understand our constitutional position, who we are, a Krishna, full knowledge. So we, in order to avoid the pitfalls of chapala sukha, of bodhityag, of going this side and that side, and to become more steady in our bhakti, more steady in our practices, we have to cultivate sattva guna, mode goodness. That will really help us to become less inclined to that bodhityag, from shifting between being a puranjana to being a prema bhakti. So it will help us to put things more in perspective from the mode of goodness. So cleaning up our act, cleaning up where we live, cleaning up where we work, cleaning up our thoughts. I give you a really good tip to clean up your thoughts and to stop criticizing devotees. Because criticizing devotees is one thing that really puts the brakes on and really pushes us toward the Puranjana mentality.
Blasphemy
devotees. It's one of the 10 offenses, right? But to think badly or to criticize or to bring them up. And Vaishya Shekhar, he made this point that if you take a vow, if you value this so much, you value that you won't talk about anybody if they're not here. That will help you a lot. If you say, I'm not going to talk about somebody unless they're here with me in the room, then generally speaking, when we're talking about somebody, we're not generally glorifying them, unfortunately. We're usually saying, yeah, that guy is hopeless. He gives terrible class. He's hopeless in kirtan. He never played on time. He's a useless guy. He can't cook. Whatever. We say so many things about him. Sometimes we say nice things. But generally, when something comes up, hey, did you see what such and such was wearing this morning at the temple? Can you believe it? They came to the temple like that? So avoid that. And we've been practicing that lately. It's quite useful. A useful tip.
What about the anarthas?
Yes.
They keep us away from anarthas.
Yeah, anarthas. The unwanted things will be removed when we're in the mode of goodness. The mode of goodness will help us to remove them because we can identify them. In the mode of passion and ignorance, we can't identify anartha. We think the anartha is artha. And we think that's good for us. We want that thing. But when we get in the mode of goodness, we can start to discriminate properly.
Also the taste. Taste will come.
And the taste will come automatically when we cultivate suffering. Anything else?
Not talk about the devotees they are watching the room. But we can always praise other devotees who are not in the room.
Yeah, we can. We can praise them. We can praise other devotees. It's a good thing to do. But if we're not praising, we shouldn't talk about them. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Shri Prabhupada ki jai.